Testing, testing, yeah.
Okay, so let's call to order the public hearing and regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, March 9th, 2017. First, I'd like to just welcome all of our staff and Planning Commission. We do have some additional people joining us. Mike Sippo from our Public Works, and he's a project manager, as well as Brian Tucker from our Public Works, who's also a project manager. We're joined by Lynn Hyde, an associate planner, Janet Estep, our CED director, as well as Jamie Burrell, our senior planner, who we welcome back after such a long hiatus from the Planning Commission meetings. The purpose of this legislative meeting is to discuss a few topics. One is the development agreement for the village at North Bend, our sewer and water amendments continuation, and also our wireless facilities topic. This meeting is being recorded, and the recording and our minutes will be available on the city's website. As we go through our agenda this evening, we'll first approve our minutes. We'll have public comment on non-agenda items. We'll get a staff report on the development agreement, and then we'll open the public hearing. During the public hearing, you will each have 3 minutes to speak. Please first begin with your name and address. After that, we will start the time of 3 minutes. All comments should be directed to the chair, as well as questions. After the public hearing closes, the staff or I will try and address your questions as best we can. Okay. With that, we have 2 minutes to approve. First, I'll entertain a motion for the February 9th minutes. Motion by Commissioner Von Trapp in a second. Second by Commissioner Miller. Any comments or changes? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving minutes for February 9th say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are approved. It is unanimous. Motion to approve the February 23rd minutes.
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Von Trapp. Second.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Gildersleeve. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for February 23rd, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Abstain. I was absent.
Okay. Motion passes with one abstention. Thank you. At this point, I'd like to invite any member of the public who wishes to address the Planning Commission on something that is not on our agenda. Again, if you just want to talk to us about something that's not on our agenda, this is your time to speak now. Seeing none. Okay, the next item is our public hearing for consideration on the development agreement for Village at North Bend. First, we'll begin with a staff introduction. Who would like to begin? Ms. Burrell.
I can. Good evening, everyone. I think everyone should have, if you need additional packets, there is a staff report, which is part of the Planning Commission packet. Attached to that are some exhibits, and I'll be adding some additional comments that were received since this was issued shortly here. Up on the board, we have a map of the proposed project, and then the other one is kind of a conceptual landscape map. Behind the first figure, one of the figures attached to the staff report is a King County IMAP, which just helps to orientate you with the site. So this is heading out North Bend Way. The new Tollgate Park with the big walking trail is on the other side of North Bend Way. Nintendo of America is just south of the property. This is 8th Street and Almway crosses. And so a development agreement has been requested to construct single-family and multifamily residential uses within an employment park zone. An employment park is a generally a light industrial employment zone, which doesn't permit outright residential development. So that is why the applicant, who is here tonight, has requested a development agreement per our code. And that section of our code is relatively short. I also included that as an exhibit to the staff report. So a development agreement is subject to review and approval by the City Council, and that's based on the Planning Commission's public hearing tonight and recommendation. A development agreement otherwise is consistent with all the conditions of the code to the fullest extent possible, but it can allow different development standards or uses as what's being proposed than otherwise would be allowed by the code. And that would be in order to provide flexibility to achieve public benefits, responding to changing community needs, or to encourage modifications that provide functional, equivalent, or adequately achieve the purposes of the city standards. And that's kind of directly from our code there. So background, this site was part of a 2006 Miller Land and Timber LLC development agreement for mixed use, which was approved by City Council. And that was in effect for 10 years, and it expired last year. As I said, access to the site is from 8th Street, and which here shows up coming this way. Here's abandoned Burlington Northern, Almway. And here's a little bit of a vicinity map there. So access would be off of Northwest 8th with emergency only off of Almway. The development agreement proposal is detailed on page 2 of the staff report, and that highlights the terms that we envision to be part of the application process. The site is 24 acres, it's undeveloped, and it's located at the end of 8th Street. It contains special flood hazard areas and is bordered on the east by Gardner Creek. There are some wetlands here that you can see on site, and then there is a large wetland off site, the buffers of which, actually right here, extend into the property. Let's see. The site is flat in the northern and eastern portions adjacent to the creek, and then it has 40 to 50% slopes on the southern and western portions, so it's significant change in grade along the site. The latest plan submitted that is up there proposes 53 single-family homes and 50 multifamily attached townhomes, and those are in 3, 4, and 5 unit configurations, with the density being 4.29 dwelling units per acre. The previous plan, also provided by this applicant, included 131 townhomes. The site plan also proposes, down on the south side, 6,000 square feet commercial building, which would be for retail, restaurant, or daycare. So the staff report analyzes the proposed land use with the North Bend Municipal Code and the comprehensive plan on pages 3 through 8. The city code establishes 6 purposes for the EP1 district, and as I said, it's generally to provide 4 areas of light industrial and limited commercial use that is compatible and not detrimental to adjoining uses. Permitted uses in the EP1 district include offices, professional, business or corporate, light manufacturing, warehouse and distribution, and research development. The comprehensive plan land use element describes the employment park area where future employment growth would occur to meet the 20-year job target for North Bend by the Growth Management Planning Council. And the economic development calls for the EP1 and EP2 areas to provide living wage jobs. So the Peace Planning Commission tonight is charged with holding a public hearing on this topic and reviewing public comments that have been received, and looking and deciding if they would recommend to council that we enter into a development agreement. If Planning Commission recommends that, council concurs, then this would come back to you one more time. You'd be looking at the actual terms of the development agreement. Like I said, the applicant, Mr. Joe Singh, is present here tonight with his engineer and can answer specific questions or details on the project, as well as our public works staff, who's pretty familiar with the project as well. But the focus tonight really should be more on the desired land use of the property rather than the details, like I said, and if there is interest in pursuing that development agreement that would then come back. for the Planning Commission. So there were two public comments provided in your packet in the staff report. Those were from the Northwest Railway Museum and an adjacent property owner, Brandon Booth, who I think might be here tonight. And then I will pass around and put into the record five additional comments. I've emailed these to the Planning Commission, but I'm just providing them printed out. And these are from, there's a letter from Nintendo, there are two emails from the Snoqualmie Tribe, and two citizen emails as well. So I'm happy to kind of go through these and provide a bit of a summary if you'd like, or we can give time to maybe review it for a few minutes. And with that, I think I'll pass it along to you.
Okay. Before opening the public hearing, did everybody sign on the sheet who wants to speak? Anybody else want to sign up to speak? Okay. Just want to let you know, we're holding a public hearing here, but regardless of whether or not we recommend this go forward or not, the City Council will also give you an opportunity to speak when they consider it, so you'll also have another chance to speak there as well. Okay? So, with that, it looks like 7:10. We'll go ahead and open the public hearing, and the first person I have on the list is Joe Hopper. Joe, could you please state your name and address for the record?
Yeah, I'm Joe Hopper. I'm with Pacific Engineering Design. I'm the engineer of the project. Our company address is 15445 53rd Avenue in Seattle. Actually, I'm a little bit Seattle mailing address. Mr. Singh has hired me and my firm to prepare engineering plans and do planning for this project. We have done some research on the previous development, the Miller development we're calling it, and the density that was involved in that and in an approved development agreement. And we're looking at minimizing the density yet still having a similar type of layout for residential and some commercial on the property. What I'd like to point out is that this site, although zoned EP1, the topography on the site warrants itself to smaller footprints of buildings and roadways and the like. So what the best use for this property from an engineer's perspective, sorry to get too technical for you, but is this type of development. If you wanted to do industrial type uses on this property, you need large flat areas, and there isn't a lot of large flat area on this site. There's some, but it's within a floodplain area. The upper portion of the site was quite sloping. That warrants itself for more residential type development than it would for commercial type development, just because you can't really build big buildings on slopes. So I would also like to say that with this development, there are other infrastructure improvements that will be done that are to the benefit of the city that desperately need to be done currently. There's a creek crossing on Northeast 8, and there's a creek crossing on Alm Way. The culvert on Northeast 8 is corroded and eroding, and the road is about half the width that it should be, and there's a metal plate over the culvert just to keep the few cars that cross it from plunging into the creek. It needs to be replaced today, realistically. And Almway is closed because that crossing is also structurally unsound as well. This development will replace both those crossings, and it's quite an extensive expense that the developer will take on versus the city taking on. Also an improvement that the developer is going to enact is a force main of sewer for this whole region. So for Nintendo and all the other neighboring sites around, they will be able to gravity to this site or somewhere near the site and have the sewer pumped to the treatment plant downtown here. And so that will help serve a large portion of these lots that currently don't have sewer access. I think that's all I think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
If I'm not too long-winded.
No, thank you very much for your comments. They answered some of my questions. Yeah. Next person on the list is Brandon Booth. Brandon?
My name is Brandon Booth. I live at basically 4021 Southeast 106 Place. Mr. Brooks from Greensdale. I said based, I've been living in North Bend for 6 years. I've worked in the coating and construction industry over 3+ years. And I've owned a condo and 3 homes of different sizes. I would never own a condo again in that it doesn't retain the value and becomes glorified apartments and will become a bit of a burden on the city over time. I was part of a class action litigation against a large builder based on the quality of the home's construction with the trades. Because of my background, I was a key witness to the code and the violations and facility construction. I was advised by my realtor that the land behind my home here in North Bend was wetlands, and obviously that was not true. When looking at the scope of the project and reaching out to the surveyor team to find out the true reality of the unknown building was planning to clear cut the woods behind my home and to the left of my home all the way down to Nintendo, showing no concern to the habitat, the animals that lived there, the ecosystem, and my family's privacy, as well as how it would impact the property values and the neighboring homes. The surveyor I spoke with even voiced his concerns regarding the streams and the runoff of the property being a hard point for the builder to get approved to build, as the abundant animals and life bear presence that is evident in the area and on our property. This conversation opened my eyes and happened to my boyhood home of 3 generations of my family in Anaheim, California, and slapped me straight in the face. Now, this type of building has destroyed so many small towns in the name of progress, as it did for my family as we all left the area along with childhood friends. I am no way against the growth of North Bend. If we work together in setting in some ground rules and respecting our neighbors' wishes, and if we set growth to a 2 home per acre with homes strategically placed on lots, creating privacy and limited tree removal, this will help maintain property values, minimizing damage to our ecosystem, environmental changes, animal population, and maintaining equality overall with the forest and stream systems. With implementing building eco-friendly homes, that would also help us to build and help our environment and keep the and respect our town members, and most of all, maintain the town environment we love. We need to have a survey done to determine a set number of homes to maintain the fragile ecosystem we have. It's set.
You want to just summarize the last point?
My last point is basically the builder is not thinking about my overall privacy in this build. When you look at the scope of where my property lands and what they're building, my property will have no privacy, and it's going to affect the surrounding woods of my house and my property values.
Thank you for your comment. Okay, next person on the list is Joe Singh. State your name and address.
Well, I'm going to talk about EP.
Your name and address first.
My name is Joe Singh. I'm from Normandy Park and CDB Venture LLC. I'm going to talk about EP1. You know, I studied that EP1 zoning very carefully, and I looked at the site. I'm going to be very frank about it. EP1, industrial, warehouse, or other infrastructure, will never happen on this piece of property. It's been sitting there for the last 10 years. It was approved one time for $235 million. The economic condition, the banking closure, the previous people, they couldn't go through it. We talked to the city, we looked at the property, we talked to the city that yes, development agreement is allowed according to your rules and regulation and from the legislature in the state of Washington. And then we enter into a memorandum of understanding, hire the engineer, you know, get moving to the right direction. This particular project will bring a tremendous opportunity for the city of North Bend. The people who are, gentlemen said it's going to be a rental, it's not going to be a rental. People will own the units.
Excuse me, Mr. Singh, please keep your comments to me.
Those people will be coming from Kirkland, Bellevue, Millennium people, which makes pretty close to $125,000 to $150,000 a year. Those people, when they buy those units, they will be spending the money. I'll give you an example. You look at the Isqua Highland, land unit development. They have everything. They put the sewer line, water line, storm sewer, state of Washington stepped up to it, put the overpass for them. They contributed some money. I don't know. But they have the pads, you know. It's not an industrial warehouse or anything. They have a commercial pad here, which is a restaurant, small shops here and there. They started first project, which was a townhome project. It was sold 100%, but nobody moved into that particular area yet. They started the second one. When it got to 99%, people start moving into it, start building restaurant, other shops in there. Then they start building home. It's all built out now. When you dive up there, you let a wow factor. You see that shopping center, people spending the money. They are not going downtown. Downtown is okay. Isqua downtown is pretty good. And same thing could happen with the city of North Bend. City of North Bend does need help. Business, if you have the warehouses or other manufacturing facility, you know, it's just not going to happen on that piece of property. When this project is built, other businesses are going to come into town. They're going to say, okay, we have people in here now, restaurant, some other shops, going to come in. You know, and I give you an example, city of North Bend. Look at this street. I saw that street about 10 years ago. It was gutted, no sidewalk, nothing. When Snoqualmie Village came in, they paid the mitigation fees. It stand over there, federal funding, matching funding. It could happen right with the city of North Bend. And we have spent a lot of money so far on that. And I was expecting to start construction on this project sometime at the end of April, or no later than middle of May. Get this thing done and get over with, you know. And to be honest with you, I talked to some franchise, IHOP, about 2 weeks ago. They came back. He said, Mr. Singh, we can't go over there for one reason, because the population is not there yet to support that kind of investment from us and from them. Okay. So I'm going to build a hotel in here too.
Thank you. Thank you. That's your time. So appreciate your comments.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome to submit anything else in writing.
Okay. Thanks.
Next person on the list is Sharon Wilshire. Sharon?
Hi, I'm Sharon Wilshire. I reside at 249 Bendigo Boulevard South, which is a corner park in Bendigo, right near downtown. I also work at Bendigo, but I'm here speaking on behalf of just being a resident of the city and being in close proximity to this new proposed development. I don't feel like the infrastructure of our city can handle another development at this time. I think that we need to slow down. We have the cottages going in and other developments in progress that have already been approved. I think we need to let those be finished and work on our infrastructure, our sewer system, our road system. It just cannot handle, you know, any more newer developments that, you know, haven't been approved. I also believe that by putting a residential there, where there already is one of our largest employers in the city, I think that that would put a hardship on that company and, you know, the business that they do in that location. I don't think people that would purchase in that area, you know, if I purchased a home there and didn't realize what type of business I was moving into, I would probably be pretty upset and, you know, not wanted there after I moved in. I just don't think it's a good idea. Can I mention sewer?
Okay. Thank you very much for your comment.
A lot of things that Mr. Booth said also about the wildlife and things. Working at Nintendo, I do get to see the elk come through there every day, and you can see the paths going through the land, you know, that the elks make on that property. And our elk are running out of places to go.
Thank you very much for your comments. Appreciate it. Next person on the list is Rich Wilshire.
I'm Rich Wilshire. I'm at 249 Bendigo Boulevard South. I'm with her. Okay. I'm not a big fan of building out there. I think, and one of the things that got me, I've poured over this all day, and I got a lot of highlights in here, but I'm not going to go through them all. But one of the things that concerns me is, well, number one, it's a lot of houses back in that area. It's a lot of wetlands. It's a lot of this. I'm sure the engineers are doing their job. They're looking to see what they can do. I get it. I know the Planning Commission is all that they can do, and they're not just throwing willy-nilly at the residents. I get that. But I think the thing that really concerns me about this whole development out there is not just the housing, but they want to put retail out there. We can't even fill in retail at Safeway. We can't even fill in retail in downtown. And now you put houses out there, if it's, let's say it's 53 houses or 53 condos, I guess, is that right? Up to 5 units per. Let's say that's the max, that's 250 families. Plus the 53 houses, that's 303 families. 2 cars per family. Guesstimate, right? Just kind of throwing numbers out there. That's 606 cars going back and forth there. Just daily with just the people living there. Now you're going to throw retail in there. Now you're going to be throwing a whole bunch of other cars in there. Now you got Nintendo trucks going in and out of there. That road just can't handle it. It's a little two-lane road, kind of like Park is over here. You know, it's just a little bitty. It's not going to work. I don't see it as feasible. We're trying to build our downtown area, which I know the Planning Commission is working on, the Economic Development Commission is working on. How do we boost that up? Putting a retail space out in the boonies over there in the wetlands kind of is counterproductive to what we're looking to do with downtown. And to me, that's the part that kind of gets me more than just building more houses. It's the whole impact of it. And in this, your first the staff report, almost every end sentence at the end of this is a negative. They don't meet this criteria. Doesn't meet this criteria. Doesn't quite meet this. Doesn't quite meet that. So just from reading that, I would go, why bother with it? You know, that's what I have highlighted is all the end lines of reading through. It sounds really kind of negative, but why, you know, what this report is going to that. I'm sure there's some tweaks and stuff that can happen to, you know, to kind of make it work, but I'm not a big fan of putting it out there because, again, it's the wildlife out there. You know, where's all that going to go? The big longhorns out there. I'm from Texas. I like those longhorns. Where are they going to go? You know, things like that. So it's more than just the housing. I think the bigger impact is how it's going to go. And our infrastructure can't handle it right now either. Sewer, water, and all that. So okay, that's all I got to say.
Thank you for your comments. That was the last person on the list. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Yes, please state your name and address for the record.
Paula Lodahl, 435 South Maple Drive. I agree with everybody that's sitting around me here. We can't even handle what we already have, and with all of the developments that this city has already approved, and all, I mean, it's going to be solid housing from here to Kinstruct down. I mean, that has already been approved, which was a big mistake. I mean, we lost the pig farm. Look at the houses that's going to be there. We can't handle our traffic. Today, with the rain, how wet is it out there? I mean, we all know that we've lived, the ones that have lived here for years and years. You guys have to just think about it, what you're being asked to do. And we have just the community. And we've been going down the wrong road for a long time. So we really, really think hard of the future that we have.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and open up to the Planning Commission for any questions that they have at this time. Who'd like to begin? I can start. Pardon me, all my printer ink ran out, so I have to use my phone. I guess my question came, we have agreements that started back in 2001, 2003, and 2006. What is the genesis of the development agreement? And I think it would benefit the Planning Commission to know, does somebody come to the city? Does the city reach out to them? And how does it change over time?
Mm-hmm. I can field that one. Development agreements are available. They're part of the code. It's always generated by a outside party, not the city, on average. So in the cases that you explained, it was an applicant came to the city, requested a development agreement under the section of the code, and by that process being allowed, the city is required to address that application just like we are any other application and bring it through the process.
Okay. And is there any action, whether on the city's part, that changed it from 2001 to where we are today in the proposal? Is there somebody in the city that's working with the applicant that kind of drives the change in commercial versus residential space?
So,
or is that all the applicant?
Basically, the Miller development agreement was a totally different applicant, totally different proposal that expired. At that point in time, that development agreement was just null and void and not part of the null and void. So at that point, I think Mr. Singh looked into the parcel, decided to invest, and came forth with an application that you have in front of you for a development agreement. There was no interaction on the city prior to him coming to us.
Okay. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Is there any opportunity, since it seemed like in the introduction, the Planning Commission can, whether we recommend or not, if it's approved, it comes back to the Planning Commission for any specific modification. Is there any opportunity at this time for the Planning Commission to make any changes to the development agreement or what's proposed?
Sure. We would take any input you would have. Like I said, we sort of outlined a proposal on page 2, just the big key things that we see at looking with Public Works as things that we would want to include in the development agreement, if that's the direction the city wants to go. And then based on the applicant requesting, you know, that he wanted something similar to the expired development agreement.
Okay.
And just to make sure everybody's clear for your role tonight, and I know Jamie already said this, so this mm-hmm. is kind of a repeat, but what we've done is we've said we're coming to you and we want you to consider the use. Mm-hmm. And if your recommendation is, yes, we would like to consider this use on these parcels, you will then have a very more detailed development agreement come forward for your consideration. If your recommendation is no, then your recommendation would be taken to the council as not to proceed with the development agreement. So this is a step towards trying to understand whether, before we go and write the conditions that a development agreement would have to apply by, we want to know first if this is something you recommend to the council to do.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes? No. But do you have a quick point you want to make or a question?
I never made any quick, how would you?
Duly noted. We heard from the engineer a point about the sewer where, and I'm going to direct this towards our Public Works because I don't understand. I thought sewer was at Nintendo, and I don't know why a new pump station is required, or if you can kind of explain how does sewer play into this development and also the surrounding lots which don't currently have access to it.
That's a great question. This is Brian Tucker, Northland Public Works. Essentially, there is no sewer in that area. The nearest sewer is located on the east side of the South Fork of the Snoqualmie River, off of North Bend Way, as well as down by the wastewater treatment plant. The applicant is proposing to construct a sanitary sewer lift station, which is comprised of a very large pump chamber, pumps, and a large diameter force main, which would convey the sewer flows about a mile and a half or so down Northwest 8th Street, attached, then would cross the river, being attached to the bridge, and then discharged in a manhole by the wastewater treatment plant. The cost range for doing something like that is approximately right around $1.7 to $2 million. So That is a heavy infrastructure investment by Mr. Singh. There is a large diameter water main at the back entrance to Nintendo. It's an 18-inch diameter ductile iron water main. So there is water service over there already. Essentially, Mr. Singh would just have to plug in and then connect that to the water main infrastructure improvements within the project.
Thank you very much. I guess my next question has to go to special flood hazard area. And I don't know if you have some point of that. We allow development in our flood hazard areas as long as you comply to certain development agreements. Is this in the 50-year, 100-year, or what kind of area are we talking about?
Should have brought
it. It's right behind you. I should have a minute.
So we are on this property right here. So it's the portion, basically, that kind of follows, parallels Gardner Creek, and that's a 100-year floodplain. This hatched area is a 500-year. So the regulated part is that blue portion. Yes, we have a series of development regulations. Like I said, the site is pretty encumbered by critical areas. It has wetlands, the Gardner Creek, and off-site and on-site wetlands.
So when you drive down Northeast A Street, you get to some residential gates. Mm-hmm. How far does this property extend in that slope?
Right.
Just so I... Because we heard some talk.
So the road essentially kind of ends right here where this blue line is, and that's, again, the floodway line. And then there are a couple driveways to this home, and then turns to dirt road. And it is hard to tell because I've gone as far as I could, turned around, and went back.
I saw it. I didn't want to drive it.
Right. And people that have actually walked the site might be able to say better, but I want to say it's, you know, maybe about half and half, a little bit more to the west where it really starts to rise up and change in elevation.
It's like where the culvert is on 8th Street.
Okay.
That's where it starts rising up.
Okay.
Because that culvert is almost gone. The other culvert, I want to look at the
is that right at the end of the road?
Yeah. The culvert is all gone.
And so when I'm looking at this map, where does that fit? Is this the slope area, or where is the slope area?
So coming up.
I can show you. Yeah. So this roadway basically follows in similar to where that driveway is now. The slope starts right about here where it gets very steep. The gate entrance is right here.
Okay.
Where you can't go any further unless you walk it. I walked it all the way up to the very top here, so... We're trying to mimic that roadway somewhat, just so less impact to the surrounding area.
Thank you. I don't know if it was at City Council or here that I heard the city was hiring a contractor to help acquire some business interest or occupancy.
The city has hired a consultant that's going to help us with economic development, business recruitment.
And has that person been found?
The person has been found. His name's Bob Stowe. We've met with him once.
Okay. So,
once since we actually put him on contract.
Where we heard public testimony about EP1 not being developable, is this person someone who would go and seek out companies to be at that location? I guess, what is his role as mm-hmm. that person?
Well, the city has quite a number of parcels that are zone EP1, EP2, and that are vacant. And he has been charged with recruiting business with some priority of downtown's storefronts, trying to fill storefronts and, strengthen the economic core of our downtown. That being said, also focus on you know, some redevelopment or recruiting of the exit 34 area. That would be, you know, that's an area that's challenged with a truck stop and therefore challenged with attracting businesses that aren't related to the truck industry. So that was one of the other priorities, is to try and attract business that met the small town character that North Bend visions for its future, and maybe look beyond just the trucking industry.
So then, I know in our comp plan we talk about our developable land, and I don't know what's changed since we did our comp plan last year, or not much is my guess, but how much of 24 acres of a loss to our employment park or commercial, if we have about 560 acres of EP1, EP2, and interchange commercial, 24 acres in one big swatch of land, I guess, to me is something that a major employer who wants to do a campus could actually do versus a 5 acre here and a 5 acre there. So my concern is, I looked at the map and I'm trying to figure out, you know, we have the area behind Trucktown, and we have a couple areas out by Mountside Fitness and Encompass area, and this lot, which is 24 acres. So my concern is, out of the percentage of our zoning in our city, where we have 40% as public and open space, and we have 47% as low density or other residential uses, our amount of commercial space where we can attract employers out here has got to be balanced somehow, so we can have a thriving community with jobs here. So, sorry, I kind of went on.
So you're asking,
is this going to be a huge impact, I guess, is my question, to our overall ability to have a big employment center in our city?
Well, that's a difficult one, because there's a lot of assumptions that kind of go into making a kind of overarching comment on that. It depends what type of development you're looking for. You know, like there has been, you know, interest in a small regional college, like an arm of Bellevue College or an arm of, you know, something of that nature, and that would necessitate definitely more acreage than, you know, maybe what you also find is smaller one-offs that are looking just for, you know, 30,000 square foot of space. So it really depends on the business that's intending to locate.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I know.
Yes.
Not easy. Commissioner Ryan, I'll turn it over to you.
Mr. Chair. I just dried out my boost and coming back from that site about a half hour ago.
Welcome back.
I'd like to ask the NASA developers the question.
Yeah.
Or maybe the staff. Have we done a water table study here yet, or is this project that far along down the line? What's the level of the groundwater?
Yeah, we've done some soil testing there. The groundwater is, I think, 5 or 6 feet below the surface in the lower portion. The upper portion is not a problem, obviously. So what we're proposing at this point in time in our development is actually raising the roadway and the house pads a bit higher, so we get everything out of that floodplain elevation and up, so that whoever moves in there is not going to get flooded.
Yeah.
And we'll have stormwater treatment for everything. We're looking at enhancing the wetland that's there now, increasing the size of it, and using that as a combination stormwater control and
habitat for more wetland. So the groundwater is an issue for stormwater and for any utilities that go deep for construction purposes, but other than that, it's not necessarily a problem as far as the development is concerned.
Most of your park is on the slope part of the park anyway.
Right. So,
curious what your flagging symbols mean, the different flagging you have on there. What's your white flags and your striped flags?
I didn't do the flagging. I don't know what their symbol is, but it's either wetland or the edge of the stream.
I'm guessing they're tick trees. They're mostly alder.
Oh.
Scattered throughout.
We haven't done any analysis on what trees are coming down, what trees are staying, what the quality of those trees are.
Your tagging trees that would be coming down.
No, I think it might have been tagged by the surveyor just to identify what trees were what.
It's a very systematic playing going on through the properties.
Well, the habitat biologist will just tie flags to trees as a location point for the surveyor to then identify where the limits of the wetland is or the edge of the stream, impact of the stream is.
Very low water bodies.
They told me that the trees were the white ones and they're pink.
Yeah, that's like it. I'm the former
forest. Well, we haven't gotten to that point. We don't know what
trees are. I'm the former forest warehouse right there. I agree with Mr. Chair. I agree with the comments that this is not an EP1 site. The site to the east is. The lower site has been logged or previously logged is more suited to EP1. I think this site clearly was miszoned. It's got slope to it and doesn't have any open area that we can put any kind of manufacturing site with a darn on there. But the other owner to the east might have ideas about that, but this property here, the one we're talking about, is not an EP1, period. So I agree with you. I don't know how it got that way. It does rise quite steeply, like they say. It's probably easily 40%. It goes to a beautiful knob that would look out from outside. It would be a very beautiful location to have high quality homes up there. I'm not so sure about all the condos, but they might be important to make the property work financially. But clearly that knob has a commanding view of the valley and would be essentially a very high-end development. Small as it is, it would be a nice pocket of development there. But I don't see commercial opportunity there on this site. The site to the east clearly would be. I would urge the owner to minimize the reduction of timber in there. It's some of the saved trees that I've wanted their flag to save me, was saving. They're old cedars that grow on top of stumps that can fall off any time. They're not rooted anything but the stump they're growing off of. I wouldn't save that kind of a tree. It's interesting to look at, but it's not a healthy tree. But I would save some of the intermediate trees that are in the understory for shading and aesthetics. But most of those are tagged to come down. Your alder's not that valuable. It's a pretty valuable tree, by the way, for a lot of reasons. But I would look at the proposal in terms of higher end development, quality home sites. I would not consider that a site suitable at all for EP1. If they're trying to put EP1 there, it's because the zone calls for it. But very little of that site is EP1.
Okay. Who else has questions for staff?
Question. Is this the same site that was at one point spoken into as being part of an interchange? This is
an interchange for the freeway?
Yeah. Because of the
I've
wetlands,
never heard that.
The...
Don't think so.
Is that like the Nintendo bypass area?
No, that's just south of there.
Yeah, I have some concerns about the amount of homes going in. I think my concerns are definitely there. Wildlife. I live right next to toll gates, so I see the impact of those elk coming through very regularly through my place, crossing, and then going further. So we are compressing that all the more. I do see what you're saying about the possibility of larger homes. That could make sense. I don't understand the EP1 being there at all. My confusion begins with that. So.
I saw a lot of active, very fresh elk sign there, and some very fresh bear sign. Clearly, it's an active pathway. But aren't they all in this valley? You know, that's just part of the mix. I'm saying that I'm agreeing with the commenters tonight that it's a very active wildlife corridor there.
Over by Meadowbrook Farm, it's understandable how they're going to migrate from area to area.
I saw 500 elk out there today. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think when you look at zoning in different places, why we put, you know, residential and multifamily and then commercial and how you have the mix of all that, and you think about the ease of access to the interstate, the compatibility with surrounding uses, and that's how you get certain areas of, you know, manufacturing and heavy use where they're not around homes that will be annoyed by noise and truck traffic at 3 a.m. and trains going by twice a day, blowing the whistle every time they cross the road.
And I think traffic is definitely something that's hugely impactful. I've seen that already personally, so my concerns are mimicking what I've heard tonight.
So a question for staff would be, are road improvements and sewer lines to be done before any building permits are issued?
Yeah, so they would. The development agreement is an extra step in the process. So the normal process, if a development agreement was approved, that only enables that developer to come in with a plan that would have to get go through a land division process. And then once that's approved, it would go through engineering. Once engineering's approved, the infrastructure gets built. And once the infrastructure gets built, then the next step is what they call kind of final plat, or, and that's when basically the city confirms all the infrastructure is installed correctly, and it's complete to about 90% complete. And at that point, they get that the lots are actually created, and that's when you can have a building permit issued. Okay. So there's quite a bit of steps ahead, you know, ahead of any development.
Would you envision part of the traffic analysis to be how Northeast 8th and North Bend Way interact, and if they need a safer crossing, whether it be a traffic light or anything like that?
Yes.
Would be part of that.
Yeah. That and a number of other traffic concerns.
Yeah, Chair, I'd like to take note also of the Eastern Oklahoma Valley Railroad comments. I think that there's some validity to the concerns about safety with residential families in the proximity of the right-of-way to Hubbard. I wouldn't think that the developer would have to share all the costs on that. I think the railway is used to putting up barriers around populated areas. It's a normal expense for them. I wouldn't think it would go automatically go to the builder for that. But I do think we need to do something along that area. Trains don't go fast. We know that. They're going about as slow as they can go. But it's just it's an attractive nuisance, as you would say in the law. Kids like to hang out and wait for the engineer. That's what I did when I was a kid.
Yep. So. They do that today.
But there's a chain link fence between me and the train.
Okay. I'm not sure if you guys have any other questions for staff, or you have any other comments. If you're ready for the question. I'm sorry, but the public comment is over. But you can submit it to staff. You can email. Thank you. Sorry, you were going to say?
I'd like to move on to discussion if we're ready to do that.
Okay. Would you like to begin with a motion?
You're going to make me phrase it, aren't you?
Would you like to make a motion for approving the development agreement for Village of North Bend?
I'd be going the other way right now.
That's okay. I mean,
to open discussion, I would actually move that we not approve this, and I'll talk about it a bit when we get to discussion.
The motion has to be in the affirmative. Whether or not you vote in the affirmative is...
Okay. I move that we approve, all right?
The development agreement.
Development agreement, really?
For Village at North Bend.
For Village at North Bend, okay.
So we have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a motion by Commissioner Gildersleeve. That is being seconded by Commissioner Von Trapp to approve the development agreement for Village at North Bend. Discussion.
Why don't I start? Yeah. I kind of led to it. So when I was taking a look at this, one of the things that I immediately started looking at is where we have EP1 and where we've talked about doing residential overlays for EP1 before. Now, admittedly, I understand that we have a difficult property, and we need to look at that. I think that that's the only thing that has me swaying a little bit is finally remembering exactly where this was, because I've been out there a lot. And I have also gone up to that gate and seen that hill and not been willing to walk it. But when we look at other areas that we have allowed residential overlays on EP1, it is in areas that are contiguous to pre-existing residential areas. This is not, with the exception of large lot single-family homes. So we're talking about actually putting something that does not meet where we have allowed this before. And we're also placing it in an area that already has a really large kind of industrial use. And I'm not discounting the fact that there's also kind of utility use there as well with the power station, kind of
Tanner.
Substation that's there. So we're talking about inserting a relatively large residential area into an area that's currently really not that. It's very different in feel. So it doesn't meet that same test when I was looking at where we've allowed that kind of overlay before. We just don't have, it doesn't match the same places that we've done that in previous situations. While I have a lot of sympathy for that steep slope and coming up with something to do, I think that one of the questions that we're being asked to look at is this an appropriate use in that place? And I don't know that it's met that test for me at this point.
Thank you.
You'll say something that will change my mind as we talk about it.
Who would like to go next?
Yes, I will. In reading the application, my gut was we have a ton of residential going in here. Where is the balance? And this is going to throw that balance off. Some things that I learned, thanks to your explanation, was that you're saying a little bit more appropriate use for this site. And that's something I didn't think about before. I haven't had the chance to go out there. I think that's an important factor to consider as we look at the site, as we look at this area. At the same time, I'm not convinced that right now that what our city needs is more residential. I feel like, yes, other things will need to come in order to balance everything out, the things that we've talked about in here multiple times. And until we allow that to come in, I feel like we're going to become something that we're not intending, or that we're actually intending not to become. And I think this is a good example and a good opportunity to pump the brakes and allow things to settle. So therefore, I'm leaning more towards maintaining as an EP1 and possibly considering best use.
Thank you. Mr. Ryan, you kind of said your piece before. I'd like to hear what you have now.
Well, nobody can blame the owner and developer for proposing what they are because they're proposing what's allowed to be there, even though they know better. They know that's not a classic EP1 location, but we're forcing them to think about it because that's what the zoning is. The higher end is going to be the residential. I would speak in favor of going forward with the proposal with the developer looking at modifying the plan to satisfy some of the concerns that we show in terms of density and industrial use or the lack of it. But I think it's a good site. I do think the site is buildable. I don't think it's as difficult as some sites are that are already under construction. I can look at one right now off of North Bend Way. So I do think it's buildable. I think maybe there's a possibility that we missed it on the zoning, but that can be fixed. But I would like to see how it's worked out in the development plan that comes forward.
Okay. Commissioner Miller.
This has been really interesting in everybody's comments. My gut went, I've been trying to be very open-minded, trust me, I have. And I live next to the sewage treatment plant, and I think even though the developer wants to help us, you know, spend our money to connect us to better infrastructure for the roads and such and the sewage treatment plant, I really feel like we've got to slow down a little bit here, take some time before we go into another huge project. I'm kind of, at this point, thinking that we should just slow down on this particular project. We need to think more about it. We need to feel more conversations going before I'm convinced that I'm behind it, I guess.
I like to. We're not approving anything. We're asking them to respond for it and have to be able to develop a plan.
Right.
At that point, we can decide for or against. But really, I'm encouraging looking at it for a fresh look to see what it shows up.
I'm open to that, yes.
Let me just clarify on that note. What you are doing tonight is recommending either approval or denial of a development agreement being drafted and come back to you. A development agreement will include all the conditions that we would require the final development to comply with, specifically since the zoning doesn't envision this. So it would go through everything from every potential condition. And so I hope that clarifies what we're asking.
And the city council would have to support it as well.
Well, you all well know when I wrote a resolution at our February 9th meeting how passionate I am about finding some housing that will meet the needs of the employment that we have in our town so that the workers who work here can actually live here. Having a sense about what this could mean, does that fit the bill? But on the other side of that, I've also been a strong advocate for a balance in our development where we have employment opportunities as well as a mix of housing that meet the needs of families, young people starting out, as well as retirees. And finding that mix in our city so we all have those options and that balance in it. I think the planning is the art and thinking about how you gain access to a site and having an exit close by, having walkability for density in our downtown that help fill the storefronts in our downtown. That said, when I look back at these development agreements and I see that we started with 300, it's hard to read. It was about 350,000 square feet of commercial space that went down to 206,000. That's now 6,000. To me, that's just not a balance in the EP1. I don't see a mix of, storefront commercial on the first floor with residential above. And I think maybe there is a balance or an option somewhere, but in the way that it's written today, doesn't provide that balance. Is there any further comment?
May I say something?
Not at this point. Thank you.
I would like to just kind of call attention to some of the suggestions or findings that you guys provided, just that the city finds that the residential uses on the projects that have reduced the potential for creating these jobs in the UP1 zone for use of that. And that's hugely important consideration when we're talking about that balance. On page 6, the proposed project, I mean, it doesn't meet the density to be established for even the low-density residential. So just calling the attention to those 2 points in addition.
Okay. You ready for the question?
Assuring with you on that, that economic engine across the street, how many jobs they have available on a regular basis, but that's a London center like we've never had before.
We can't make an assumption about what the price point will be, and that I don't think is what we're supposed to be talking about at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely opposed to from seeing what comes back. I still don't think that it's a fit for that area for the reasons that I underscored before. It just doesn't meet the... We're not in an area where it's contiguous with another area of higher density housing in the way that we've seen in other areas. And to have it be right adjacent to a large commercial center ready with the warehouse, it doesn't seem like a good place to be putting a residential development of that density. It also is going to create an island, so we may talk all we want about walkability. There'll be a little store or, you know, locally that they can walk to, whether or not it's going to pull them into downtown to shop and eat. And we may end up with another shop in Issaquah on your way home.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Ryan?
I'm anxious to just recognize that when I left Muddy and went from that site, I couldn't help but realize how nice it would be to have a beer. Beer hall right there. I think it would draw more business to the west side of town. Having a population on the west side of Bendigo, which is very little of that right now. So we think putting populations out there will help our downtown business grow westerly.
I don't discount what you have to say. I just don't think it's the right mix and doesn't allow for that job opportunities that we need in our city at this time. So with that, is there any further comment? Okay. The motion is to approve the development agreement for Village at North Bend. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Nay. The motion fails or is not approved. Okay. Item number 5, sewer and water amendments for North Bend Municipal Code Title 13, deliberation and recommendation. At this time, I will accept a motion to resume the tabled document. The motion, yeah, thank you. As you recall, the last meeting we tabled this motion to this meeting. And so therefore we had to reopen that motion. So it has been moved from the table by Commissioner Gildersleeve. Do I have a second? And a second by Commissioner Von Trapp. The motion before you again is to approve the sewer and water amendments, North Bend Municipal Code Title 13. Are there any further comments or motions at this time? I'd like to direct the Planning Commission to page 20. And it's 13.20.020.
Everybody wanted to stand listening to sewer.
So exciting.
Thanks.
We have one person.
That's why you're just here.
So the Planning Commission knows we've talked a lot about the distance, and we've asked our public works about the cost it is to run 200 feet of 8-inch pipe to a home at about $60,000. We've seen code in our public comment that came from all cities around us, whether it be Redmond to Seattle to Duval. And this is an opportunity for the Planning Commission to look at our 200 feet and determine whether or not you'd like to make a motion. If that distance is right, fine. If not, make a motion.
Say that again.
If the distance of 200 feet is fine,
okay,
then leave it as is. But if you would like it to be shorter, then I would accept a motion at this time. A motion to amend.
I would move to amend that. I think 200 feet is very long.
To 150?
I would like 100.
100 feet? So the motion is to amend the 200 feet as reflected in the sewer measurement to 100 feet by Commissioner Von Trapp. Is there a second? I'll second it. Discussion, Commissioner Von Trapp.
I didn't have a chance to read as much as I didn't have a chance to read much this time, honestly. I'm kind of torn and I'm kind of struggling. Looking at it from a homeowner, which I tried not to do, and kind of grappling with, I don't know, there's not a lot of resources that I've seen offered in order to make this work for the people who I live around, my neighbors. I think, I don't know, I've seen some other cities, it's 300 feet, it's 200 feet. I know 100 feet's kind of extreme, but...
One of the public comments that is in the back of your packet today that has some highlighting on it, you'll notice, is a citizen collected number of the adjacent jurisdictions and what they're at. I'm looking for a chance to look at that one just to get some context as to...
Three of them are 200. There's 150, there's 100, and there's Seattle is the outlier at 300.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what the best answer for this is.
Okay. I'll speak against. The reason why I'm going to go against is because there's been a long-standing protocol of growth paying for growth. And the amount that we reduce that distance means that the taxpayers have to pay the difference if the sewer was to be run out there, the existing residents. So are they really paying for growth, or are we footing that bill? If you would accept an amendment maybe to 150 feet, I might be inclined to support it.
I can compromise.
Okay. The motion has been amended to 150 feet. Thank you for the friendly amendment. Mr. Bulldozer.
I will admit, as I was thinking about this before reading, but I kept coming back to this, actually, this issue of we do still have some relatively large lots where the house with the sewer could easily be at the back of that long lot, and, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, maybe a little bit more with some of these long, narrow ones, away from that property line, yet that triggers it. And there's still a really pretty significant impact to the property owner, and is there a way we can address that? But I always wonder, when we're trying to balance this, and this actually may be a little bit of feedback from staff, when we're trying to address that, at what point to say, well, if you're 3,000 feet away, you get an extra 50 feet. Is that unfairly? Is there a recognition that that's addressing a undue hardship, or... Is it something we can actually do? Is it essentially giving to those few people that would fall into that category that doesn't allow an equitable distribution of the requirement across all people that are hit by it?
Right, so adding some sort of an exception for someone whose home is at the back of a lot.
Over X number of feet, whatever is deemed to be an appropriate, at which point it would be an additional hardship if they were required to run So if they're in that 150 and their septic fails and they can't repair it and we require them to hook up.
We did put that, I appreciate your comments, I like what you're suggesting, but we did put that variance section in. And what I'm wondering is if somebody who had that, if they would fall under the variance provision.
Could you direct us to a page?
Yeah, so it starts at the bottom of page 23. And so applicants, so that's not for short plats or short plats. So the home works director finds if he meets. Oh, you know what? This is actually for.
Yeah.
This is more for on-site subjects instead of.
Right. No, I'm thinking about, you know, the one-off individual.
Right.
I think probably most of the lots that would get hit by this are out what Maloney's Grove area. I don't think there are any that are really hit that in Silver Creek. And I'm trying to think of the other ones that might run into them. But just it seems that there should be a way to address that. If we're talking about requiring that actual house is way at the back of a
property. So you're saying if the combined
distance
is X,
is there a way we can do that and phrase it? Because a lot of what we're talking about in making some of these changes is a recognition that making everybody hook up to sewer is placing quite a bit of hardship, financial hardship, on individuals that, you know, currently aren't anywhere near, for one. But as I started looking at this, the distance issue, it became more of a 200 feet or 150 for someone could be very different from their neighbor whose house is at the back of a really long lot or is in an area where they still have relatively large lot sizes. And they're quite a bit a ways off, yet their parcel
is
within that.
If OSS fails, why does it fail?
Many different reasons. Failure to maintain might be one of them. Increasing water table, I think, is becoming an issue out here in certain areas. So maybe it's aging systems.
And some of my neighbors have had the wrong sand was used, and so it caused their drain fields to fail, but they just replaced their drain field with the right material.
If you can do that. But as the city sewer is making its way out, kind of like this, we're going to have more of those properties that could conceivably, I'm thinking of the really large lot size, could run into that. And as we're addressing this and changing the distances, I started to really think about those houses that are not right on the road.
I've had to think about it myself, I have OSS, and not having access to sewer lines for a while, I never thought about it. Possibly sewer soils, you know, keep my income enough because that's all I have. Now I have, here comes the sewer line, and I'm being forced to join the sewer system. Would it be less expensive to keep my system functioning? That's all that's being asked of anybody, is for them to keep their OSS functioning or face the alternative of hooking up. So I don't have any sympathy. I have less sympathy for people who do not attend to their OSS because they think as long as it's there, it's free. You know, all of a sudden, after 10 years of inactivity, it begins to show signs of deterioration. And so,
I'm just
saying that I would rather take a little hard line on not hooking up.
Oh, I see that. Some are, though, I'm thinking about, we have a lot of older homes, particularly in and I keep coming back to Maloney's Grove, and out in that general area. What is it, Brookside
Acres.
Acres, and then through in there. That Now, those might not actually hit this, depending on the distance, but that could be coming aging off. And I'd much rather people feel that we can come forward because we know we need to do this, rather than hide a system that has failed until they get caught. And if we have a provision in there for those properties, that...
Well, there is. I'm not sure how this relates directly to the motion, mm-hmm. but there is. If you're at the back of the lot and you want sewer, then you have to convince all the neighbors to form a ULID to get it out mm-hmm. there, right? But the difference is that we're changing the requirement, or we're proposing in this motion to change the requirement, that the requirement is instead of 200 feet that you have to hook up, it's 150. And that's it, more in line with what Snoqualmie has in there.
Right. But I'm thinking if should, whether or not that should include that secondary, so another friendly amendment kind of thing, to address those properties where the structure might be within that 150, but over a certain distance from the lot line.
I don't know that I'm fully understanding what you're saying. Is there a way to draw it, or?
Yes.
Curtis, this is a chance to amend your motion.
Again?
Yeah.
So if we have one of those lot, and it could be a bigger square, but they've come through and they've put in an development over here, and you have the house is sitting at the back of the lot. They're obviously within the 150 feet, but we're talking a pretty significant hardship on that individual if their OSS fails.
Because they're, what, 60 feet back, 80 feet
or
back, or 100 feet back?
1,000 feet.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to cut in real quick here and talk about sewer construction costs.
Yeah, okay.
So the sewer construction costs on a lot typically involves a 4-inch PVC pipe, gravel bedding, and backfill.
Mm-hmm.
On the lot, it's very, very inexpensive to install that. It's no different than installing downspouts or roof drains. The cost for sewer installation, the big cost is within the right-of-way, because you have bigger diameter pipe, you've got these giant manholes, you've got to trench down, and then you've got to put it all back, and then you've got to repave. And so sewer costs in the road are a high expense item.
Okay.
Sewer costs on a lot,
not
as much of an issue.
So the biggest thing then would be if they're at that 149 feet, they have to have the road dug up to bring mm-hmm. it down for them to be able to hook in. And then the actual cost to run into the house isn't that much.
Correct.
The big issue is going to be how far they have to take in the street.
Correct. So
can they have to have the road dug up, or can they have one of those directional bores do the work?
It depends on the classification of the street. For example, we wouldn't want somebody opening up North Bend Way. We'd rather have that bore because it's a heavy-use roadway. Some of these other outlier streets, that might be okay, where they just open that street and put those in. But where we're talking tens of thousands of dollars to install sewer main in a street, you're only talking about a couple of thousand dollars on the property.
Okay.
So
that's,
I think part of what they've also done with a lot of the cities that pick 200 to 150 or what have you, is there's a balance between the cost of a new septic, which is upwards of 30 to 40 thousand, depending on scenarios, of course. And the kind of the general, I mean, at the reason why that number 200 a lot of cities use and a lot of cities go to 150 is because there starts to be that equaling of the cost, so they're about the same.
Okay.
Now, that being said, of course, you could find a million scenarios where they're not because of some unique road standard or this or that, but that's where that balance
for the most part
is
not necessary.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to become an issue if they're over 150 feet. And if they're within that 150, it's going to be relatively minimal in comparison to the cost of it.
It's going to start balancing about the same.
That makes more sense. Thank you.
And so now I can speak in favor of 150 feet because I think it now becomes a comparable cost with a septic and makes it more of a carrot to be part of the sewer system for North Bend.
Question to staff. When the town goes through a growth spurt that we're experiencing, we're putting in sewers to replace septic systems that are around for decades. In your experience, is there government programs that offer low rate interest loans, things like that, for people who are faced with having to put out $4,000 or $5,000 that they had anticipated in their budget? Do those kind of programs exist to meet that kind of an emergency?
Michael Sippo here. Actually, I was doing a little research on Value Sewer District. They actually do financing for general facility charges. It's like a 6% financing rate, and I think that goes right onto their sewer bill. I don't know what agreements they have with banks or office to do that. I have seen that.
How does somebody find out about that, like the individuals who would be faced with that?
Well, as far as I know, Value actually does initiate the financing. I don't know as a city how we would or could take that on, but it's something that does exist.
That kind of program certainly helps speed things along if people are on the fence about whether they can afford it or not.
I know when the city of Carnation converted, but they did the whole city at once, and a lot of that was driven by health department, you know, issuing failures and whatnot, but they had some like 0.05 financing for low income, and so I'm not sure how, if the city worked that deal with the county who was financing the wastewater treatment plant, but.
So does it more play into where we had a problem that they would come in and finance? Or?
Yeah, and this was a new plant, but I know that there were really some nice cuts for low income and elderly folks, so.
That's to say, I think what that is similar to, and I don't know, but I right. think it's similar to what we did with the ULID. Mm-hmm. We had actually the same hardship kind of provisions that allowed, you know, if you were low income at a certain rate. And definitely I think we had an elderly. Mm-hmm. But if I'm understanding your question right, you're talking about if somebody's septic fails and they can't, you're saying... If they can't afford to do it, is there low interest loans that the city facilitates?
Within any kind of either a local government or a state or a federal government, that's an insurance program that specializes in those kinds of lending.
Mike, could you say that name again?
Value Sewer District. It's south, between Berrien and South Seattle. I think it serves a lot of the Rainier neighborhood, Tukwila, and north east area.
So they actually did the financing themselves?
I'm not clear. The question was asked of me from a cousin who was doing some work. Some general facility charges, and he was wondering if he could finance, and I could see on the website.
Sorry. So I'm going to pause this right there, and we can come back to this discussion. But our motion before us is to amend 200 feet to 150 feet for the distance requirement to hook up to sewer. Is there any further comment? All those in favor of amending 200 feet to 150 feet to be the difference for hooking up to sewer, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. It is unanimous. We direct the staff, wherever we have 200 feet in this document, to update it to 150 feet. Is there any concern?
May I ask the question I was going to ask?
Yes.
What kind of a cost are we looking at? If we know it at some point in the future, really almost we hope. What is the holding cost for putting a hookup from everybody's house in anticipation of their hooking up sometime in the future?
That's a really big question, and that's one I couldn't fathom to answer at this time. I don't know if there is something we can take. We look at ULID 6 and say, okay, there's X amount of properties
averaged out, it was X amount per lot. But then it starts to get complex when commercial properties and everything else. So
and multifamily and multifamily. Elevations with pump stations. And
right.
There's a lot of factors that goes into it. So it's very different for different areas. But in our map we got at our last meeting, I don't know if the staff has any copies, we were given a map of the sewer lines that were run, and it showed all the properties that were in 200 feet. You were not here for that.
I know.
It's a,
I did get that.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you think about all the areas that were in blue on that map, and what we're doing is taking that 200 feet and shrinking it down so now it's not going to touch as far out where we have larger lots or we have the constrained residential or there are already existing large lots with OSS. That's the main thing. Okay. Commissioner Ryan, you talked a little bit about having some incentive or assistance for people who were needing that. Is that something you want in the Planning Commission findings? You want to put that in some kind of wording that the Planning Commission recommends that the city develop some kind of financing for those similar to this Valview Sewer District idea? Is that what you're...
I was leading that direction. The answer was given, I think, that it exists.
Okay.
So we do have a sewer connection incentive program, and I'm not familiar with it. I've never seen it used so much so that I'm kind of trying to catch up on it. It was existing, and it talks about in order to qualify for the sewer connection incentive program, or SCIP, the applicant must be a low-income as shown on the current guidelines set forth in the Washington Community Development Block Grant Program for King County. So it could be that we do have this in here already, and I just am not up to speed as to what the block grant is. Or so before we make a new one, I think we should.
Well, I can chime in a little bit. This is actually really interesting. We have never implemented this in the 10 years I've been here. But the block grant basically stipulates the King County's regulated affordability thresholds. So there's 50%, 80%, and 100% affordable based on median income.
Sorry, and this is page 32 if you want to
Along with this. So that calling out that program as the way to identify affordability is affordable. That's how you want to do it. So kind of, it looks like Lynn's nailed it. We already have the program in place. We just have never been requested to implement it.
So I just want to maybe stress the point because this has been touched on. We've heard about Silver Creek and the cost. That is it possible to put in our recommendation that the Public Works maybe create some kind of communication that talks about this for people who might need it to point them to some section that helps them learn about it? If you can put that in our findings.
I don't think this qualifies under the definition of a taking, but some people might think that the city's forcing the use of a system they don't care to use, that that would be a taking. And would that be, something that's not a taking, but the fact that it could be construed as a taking, does that help somebody get funding in some weird way?
I don't see the taking. If the reason why you have to hook up the sewers because your OSS has failed and you are harming the environment, you are creating a health risk by that, and so therefore there cannot be a taking in that.
I would side with you on that.
Okay. But if there was, if the city, which we do not have a requirement that you just hook up to the sewer system, or you have to vacate your house, right? There's not such a requirement in our code.
Well, yeah, there is. If you the city attaches your property with a lien, they can ask for your house keys.
Well, that's if you don't pay.
I want to avoid that.
You pay your bill. sorry, did you want to say that? Are there any other motions or changes to be made? Hearing none, final thoughts and comments.
Well, I tried to read this chapter. I found it very technical. And much of it beyond my level of understanding, but I'll vote for it.
Thank you.
I trust our staff to have this letter.
I think that we've made some changes that provided an interesting balance and opportunities and might result in a little bit of infill in some areas, but not a huge amount by opening that up. I think that they are reasonable adjustments. So I'm ready for us to move forward. Yes. Do you want me to call the question, or does someone else have other phone
calls? We'll go around just to see.
I had a question for you gentlemen here. This is specific to the Polygon cottages right now. I've helped out on that.
Sorry, Mary. That's out of order because we have the motion and we're about ready to vote. Yeah.
I'm out of there.
You can wait to get to the order. I'd just like to say first.
I feel better with session or whatever you want to call it, resolution. I feel like that's, what she said, more middle ground.
I want to begin and thank the citizens who provided us some information as well as all their comments and their feedback. But more importantly, I want to thank the staff who were so responsive, so accommodating, who made so many iterations and changes to this document, and who put up with so many of our questions, as well as thank Public Works and your Public Works director, who I questioned like a witness on a stand. Yeah. I'd also like to thank the commission. We get better and better at our deliberations and our discussions, and I'd say that this is the best of my 5 years that this planning commission is really involved, and I thank you for your dedication and your work. So with that, the motion before you is to approve Title 13, the sewer and water amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry, the motion should have been as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion carries. It is unanimous. Next item on the agenda is introduction to wireless facilities. Who would like to give us that introduction?
Yeah, I would.
Miss Hyde.
I would like to. I got to say, I'm impressed with the committee here. I thought that they might not even make it this far because you had a lot on there. So what you have here, this is obviously, you've made it to the back of your packet, a cursory introduction. And why you're looking at it today is because our wireless facilities, the wireless communication facilities code is out of date and also has some inconsistencies to it. Similar, you've heard that before, I know about other codes. So the out-of-date part, we've had a few federal acts that have passed, one of them is the Spectrum Act that provides guidance to where you are, some of the locating and co-locating parts of the wireless facilities. And right now, our code was never updated in 2010 when that was passed, so we need to, one, update our code to be in compliance with that. And the other reason that we brought this to you is right now in our code, the wireless facilities are a permitted use, but all of the performance standards associated with the design, the screening, the location, the need is located under a conditional use permit section. But because it's just a P in our permitted use table, it doesn't legally, the chain doesn't take you to the conditional use permit, so it's harder to regulate the design and look and placement of the wireless facilities. So in November, I believe it was November, City Council passed a moratorium on all new permits for locating wireless facilities. So our goal, but if it takes longer, that is just fine, was to, within the 6 months, have come back, adjust the code, and work through it with you. The first, so jump in if you have any questions that I'm not
explaining. Can I just
explain it while you
have? Is this a different word for cell phone tower? Or does it include more than that?
It includes more than that because it includes, and sorry, a lot of these I'm probably going to have to, if anyone else knows, or I might have to come back to you because I'm learning about it as we go too. But it includes like locating facilities on top of a building. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they can be the ones that look almost like an old school antenna or they're the dishes. It also includes locating them on top of power, like existing power poles. So it's not necessarily just the ones that you see that come and are placed and made to look like a tree downtown or something.
Well, I was actually just going to comment so that they can look at one, and if you haven't seen one of those yet. If you go into on 405, the exit, it kind of curves and takes you up the hill to get onto the 116th. It's like the first exit after you get on the 405. The building that's right there has some of those.
So
mounted,
405 go north?
Going north. Okay. As you come up there, there's a building that's right there that I think is an architecture firm or something on the side. They're all around the top of the building.
Okay.
So if you look at those, you'll see what they look like and kind of how they attach them and just try to make them blend in.
Yeah. It is interesting because I've started looking at every city now a little differently, looking up at the rooftops as to what's up there. You do notice them more than you realize. Mm. Right, and I don't know if I should add this or not, but the reason that we did start looking at this is we did have an applicant interested in what our code was in the city, which is what brought to light that it was inconsistent. So there is some interest. The first draft you have is Exhibit B, is a boilerplate code that is addressing the legal, the legality. It would put us in compliance with the state and federal law, is that first draft. And then I, like I said, this is just to start discussion. I included, we looked at a few different codes, ways that other jurisdictions have done it around here. Issaquah had a pretty straightforward, easy to read code, I thought, compared to some can get really complicated and hard for staff or users to follow. So it's quite, I thought it had a nice approach to it. It was so kind of taking some of these, any other ones that we find or approaches you want us to look at, and figuring out how we make what's best for North Bend is really where we're headed.
So along Curtis's point, I guess trying to understand what the use of this cell tower, internet, or other communication, and being that we're in a valley, and you talk about height above a telephone pole, and there's 20 feet, and they say, well, that's not enough to get a signal, I need 100 feet. And we all of a sudden have something that looks like a fake Douglas fir, right? 100 feet tall. So that's where I think helping to understand what the use or what these are, for me, to I don't get exactly what we're trying to do. Like, if we want to extend cell signals to all of our trails, that's a great benefit. But how do we do it in a way that is in keeping and doesn't impact our downtown and all that good stuff, I guess. That's like my initial, I don't understand too much about it, so I'm going to go take a look at the buildings. And
one thing to keep in mind, because we are on a valley floor, we did have some questions come to us and say, hey, what's your rules and regulations? And that was for the highest point down, which I think was a water tower, or something of the like. So because we're the valley floor, we're not the highest destination for these facilities. So I think, you know, that's part of it. Our code was actually, you know, oriented to co-location, so really trying, the goal would be to try to minimize them, co-locate them whenever possible. And I thought we restricted monopoles in the past. You know, those are kind of the way of the past. Now it's about co-location on existing buildings. So, you know, one very viable location is like a water tower or something like that. So those are the things, like Lynn said, we're still wrapping our heads around these aren't the regulations we deal with on a daily basis. So I don't know. I know like a Verizon or a provider would want to spread the service mm-hmm. even to the trails and what have you, and that there's value in that from a city. But what we want to make sure we do is look at the community character also, and so that's where that co-location kind of desire came.
Commissioner Ryan, you had a question? If not, I'm going to go.
I have a question. We're talking about bringing a commercial service. How are we going to codify that? Are we talking about individual towers that help me get my best football game I want to get that day? What are we doing here?
Right, so, and we're not trying to bring anything. It's if somebody comes to us and wants to place something that will help enhance the wireless facility. Again, you can talk about whether you want it to be a tower or prohibit towers, or if they're co-location on top of an existing pole or on top of a roof, but it's not, what we're talking about right now isn't a big building, substation or power station that would be something like that. So it's more located on a rooftop or power or on top of an existing power pole or water tower.
Is a good example of this, and I'll just say my internet provider. Because I pay for internet service at my home, when I go around North Bend, I have their signal wirelessly, and I can connect to that and sign in through my account, and I get wireless activity instead of using my cell phone plan. So is this an example of how that would work? Is that provider is attaching themselves to certain buildings and therefore extending their wireless signal as a benefit to their customers in the city? So, for me, I would think North Bend should be a wireless, easy, 21st century city. But if that's what this is creating, it helps us understand, I guess, kind of what it is. Like, we're not trying to get a huge signal out to every nook and cranny, but...
And again, this is private, this is for private utilities that come in, so it's not the city providing a public utility.
No, I
guess... It's someone
that.
Like Verizon coming in, or AT&T, and one thing they have to show is that they need it. They can't just place as many as they can to get the strongest signal. They show a grid that says it's necessary here because there's a gap in their coverage. So it could be all of the above that you're mentioning.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think the important part is a lot of them are actually on the top of the, and they co-locate up there, and they look something. And you'll see these on the buildings in Bellevue. I know the buildings you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can flip the...
It's a little in your face now that it mm-hmm. slopes mm-hmm. up. Wasn't as obvious before.
For me, I appreciate that because it helps understand what you're doing it for in order to understand what it should look.
They can look like things like this on the top of on top of the tallest buildings in towns mm-hmm. or what have you. So I think Tiger Mountain has a few. You'll see them. So the I think from a planning perspective is, our network in town for our citizens is good. And I don't know if anybody I've never heard of like big holes. So Verizon and any other wireless communication company is going to want to expand and potentially use a site here. So we need to make sure that the rules are in place. That ultimately, to me, this is. Co-location is about aesthetics and minimizing the amount of one-offs that you get. And definitely restricting monopoles and that kind of stuff. I mean, the monopole system kind of thing came about a lot in the Midwest where you didn't have a high location and you had to build something. So that became a cheap way to provide the service.
Yeah.
So anyway...
We've just put one on Haystack Peak, and you've got everything. Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of thing that we don't know what we don't know. What's coming ahead of us? We can prepare for some.
Can I just say, just on what Jenna's point is, she says we have great coverage in the city. As I am heavily involved in the Middle Fork and the trail usage and development of the Mountains of Sound Greenway, if you go past Twin Falls Middle School, you do not have cell service. And I have personally called a couple of providers trying to get them to boost a signal down that way because it is a gap you know, storms come in suddenly, you get hurt, there is nothing until you drive 20 miles out. So, Skillers.
Well, and that's some of those that they put on the buildings are more signal boosters, too. And I think that you might be surprised the number of people in North Bend that have a signal booster that has been sent to them that's at the highest point in their house. In order to get signal, we have weird dead spots sometimes caused actually by really tall trees. And
that's true.
Providing some of these that you see on the side of the building provide that kind of even signal. It gives them a better ability to bounce from some of the big towers that you might see further out and on those ridges. So it'll be interesting to learn more.
One thing to keep in mind as you consider these, and just from a priority standpoint of your time, in 10 years we have never permitted one in North Bend, and that's because we're the valley floor. And if we were a high destination in need for those corporate, that engine, we would have had that call many, many times. So, you know, it's not something I see all the, you know, I don't spend hours and hours of your time, you know, because this is more about aesthetics and maybe helping the
organizers. But at the same time, I mean, if we're not adequately prepared, you know, somebody comes in, they say no.
Oh, that's so why we're here, yeah. But the magnitude of the amount of times this has come up is...
It may be interesting, though, wouldn't it, to have, as a matter of policy, of some kind of an agreement with the Forest Service and the DNR to have some kind of a ping set up for an emergency signal if you have somebody who's down in a recreational environment. It's on our side, on Mount Washington, that could relay something. It's a signal to somebody who's just going.
I'm sure they work on things like that, the search and rescue people.
We talked about like an emergency phone down the middle fork, but we have to get funds to pay for something like that.
Yeah, so I think what I'm hearing is to better help us all understand it, is to bring some more information about what exactly these facilities are, maybe some photos or examples of them. I have Googled them and haven't come across really great. I was watching you Google and look for them, but I'll spend some time looking for examples of where they are and start to bring back some ideas for our next one. Again, this was just to get us to start talking about it. I wasn't preparing well.
Yeah.
Just more English. So much.
Yeah, I honestly have some ideas in my head, but cool. It has nothing to do with how the signal would actually function. And I almost, you know, do we create a code that really doesn't meet their need is my other kind of caution in that, right? So
that was kind of my point to the magnitude of how often it's come up in our office. I think the key is flexibility, that if they need it, it can happen. And if it does happen, it's done aesthetically in a way that North looks good. Mm-hmm.
And if you find any examples that you want me to share, send them over, and I'll include them in the next packet for everyone.
I'd like to contact the local artist.
I think that you're going to go on a field trip with some photos.
No. I think you could go to the IMAP, King County IMAP, and pull a photo of the building that I just told you about.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll see them. I notice it every time I drive that way.
I've actually noticed those, too. That's funny.
Now you know what they are.
Yeah, I know, right, exactly right.
Okay. Anything else for our wireless facilities? Staff, if I may, on our Planning Commission recommendation for sewer and water, important to note the 150-foot is based on equivalency of cost per OSS in our recommendation. If you put that on there, like why we changed it.
Yep. Yeah. A general... effort, yeah, okay.
Yeah. To be more
inclusive. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Is there anything else we did?
Good work tonight.
Yeah, and I echo what you said. Thanks for your hard work on the sewer code. It is technical, and I appreciate your thoughts on it, and really reading through it and getting prepared for it every time.
Thank you.
That's a lot to read.
It's a lot to work on. Yeah.
Well, I do it at work.
And you gave us an easy one.
Yeah.
It's short.
Good to the order?
I had two things.
Yes, sir.
If possible, especially since you're here, sir. Picket extension.
Yes.
There are a couple barriers in place.
Yes.
That people are driving around.
Oh, dear.
If there were the possibility to extend those barriers,
spike strips.
Nonetheless, neighbors would probably appreciate that. It would delay the inevitable as much as possible until the inevitable happens, which is that street gets extended.
Is it down at the very end of Pickett?
Yeah.
Where it transitions from the flat road to the gravel, the existing gravel?
Yeah, right in that landowner's front yard. Yeah, I don't know how they got around, but I saw them do it, and then I went for a run down there. I was like, goodness, I don't know how they got around this. Wow. They must have, run up onto the... They were pretty determined, I'll say that. Because the one that I saw them go around was a lot easier to get around than the one that they already did get around. So I don't know how that happened.
Wow.
But it was impressive.
Okay. I will look into that. Please. Yes. I'm fascinated.
Yeah. Just one more thing. We had talked about those new athletic fields.
Yeah.
And I thought that the goal was to have those ready and available for April, so that Mount Si could start using them for baseball practice. I was just wondering what the time frame.
I can give you a little update on that.
You bring a little bit more.
The applicant definitely had that desire, and I think they were still working through their financing. So they've been working through their financing, going through, decided to go to a different loan approach. As a result, has still working through that. So they have yet to move forward due to financing.
So that's the hang up. But the project is still...
Assuming they get their financing, they say they want to move forward.
It was approved by City Council. So
yeah, they're waiting on another bank to approve them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Miller, thank you. And I apologize if I was harsh.
It's okay. I was completely off the track. I apologize. I had a question about the hotel. Where are we at?
Oh, the hotel.
I get the question a lot.
Great question.
I'm going to keep asking that question.
Things have been moving very slow, as you've seen. They have changed project managers with the hotel. That is now picking up a significant amount of steam. So we're hoping that we can get plans approved, civil site plans approved before summer. So hopefully they can start construction this year. But basically they've got all the city comments, and we're just waiting for them to address those comments and then resubmit to the city. But it's definitely a high priority on our side of things to get those plans approved as soon as possible, because everyone's getting tired of looking at a pile of dirt out there.
Mm-hmm. We see the need.
Yes.
And a very off-the-cuff thought or request potentially is there any way I can possibly get on that property with someone from the city and just walk it?
The hotel?
Yeah. I'd just like to walk that space. I've been staring at it, and I just would like to see what, I don't know, that's just my curiosity.
Yes, certainly.
Okay.
Let me track that.
I don't want to put anyone out, but...
Your email or your contact information, maybe we can schedule something next week and
I
can take you for a tour.
Okay, that'd be great.
I should go.
I
know. Let's all go.
Thank you, Brian, for that offer.
Thank you so much. I got them. And thank you, everybody, for all your hard work.
Thanks for yours. You're the volunteers.
Takes a village.
It does.
And then, Mary, did you have a question about public lands development?
Well,
as well,
I was stumbling over my words there, but I was over on that site. And where are we at? They laid the water underneath.
Water's in. Sewer is in. Sewer's probably 99% complete.
Okay.
They put the sewer in, then we have them provide a video to make sure that the sewer is installed correctly.
Awesome.
And so I just checked that today. They're just going to jet it out one more time because there's still little pine pieces of gravel that are in there. We want it out. We want it perfectly clean. But that's maybe 4 hours worth of work. Site-wise, curb and gutter is in, and they still have a little bit more grading that they have to do. Storm drainage, I'd say the storm drainage may be 80% complete. And I think we're getting kind of close to issuing the model home permits for that project.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably in a couple of weeks you'll start to see some
polygon.
And they're hoping to construct all the homes in this year, in the summer. So it'll be a fast community.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, all over that. So Curious Cypress, excuse me.
Yes,
that's awesome. Okay, well thank you for updating us. Appreciate it.
This may be off the wall. Do any of you know the vacancy rate of the commercial center? Of the commercial buildings in town?
No, we don't.
Have a guess.
The vacancy rate?
Vacancy rate.
Well, if you take out the vacancy of the buildings that are choosing to be vacant, we actually don't have a lot of vacancy in downtown. We have more out actually at the Safeway Center.
Side city limits.
Oh, city limits altogether? Oh, no, we don't have that number. I don't know.
I can guess 25%. What's your guess?
I don't even know if I can guess right now.
We're 90%.
Extremely depressing to try to get out from the Mountain View Center and see door after door after door. Mm-hmm. Walk above. What's going on?
Got a new UPS store?
Mm-hmm. NFO. Or phone.
Yeah. Ooh, Trapper Sushi tonight. That was the first. That was delicious.
Yeah,
that is a good spot.
Favorite spot.
Mm-hmm. And actually, all the new, I was surprised, I believe, all maybe one that extension on it are filled right now.
As of tonight. Yeah. It's population. Our population's 30,000 at the very, very, very max. Whole Upper Valley wide, and a lot of that Safeway area is driven from the freeway. So once you get deeper down, there's a lot of.
What do you think the fill's going to be on the new Safeway and this on the bridge? What's that going to do to the Northville?
Yeah, good question.
I think that if you look at some of the what Snoqualmie has done in their own retail studies, their retail leakage is primarily people that are shopping in Issaquah. So whether or not we'll see a significant impact on people who are not already, they're already not shopping in North Bend when you look at those numbers. So, and they've got a lot of that available on their website if you dig deeply. Mm-hmm. In terms of where they looked at where people on the red shopping. So I think that if anything, it puts more money into the overall Valley community that right now is leaving the Valley.
Mm. Is this the kind of information that this new employee is supposed to be leading to, this new staff person you have that's looking at business in town? Is this part of their...
This is not a staff person. This is a consultant that's been hired at a fairly, high rate, so they're not going to be doing analysis like that now. They're going to be focusing more on, that would be something that's more of the technical information that is not going to be what he's working on.
He's not going to have an interest in what ground level looks like.
Oh, maybe I thought you were asking me if he's going to be doing a vacancy rate study or something like that.
As part of his or her information about our city, what we have to work with, what we have growing.
Yeah, we've been working with him on and bringing him up to speed on where we have vacancies, where our biggest challenges are, what kind of businesses we want to pinpoint or focus on, so absolutely, but the actual study I thought you were asking me about.
No, I'm just,
yeah.
And does that also include manufacturing and other industrial uses that are traditional in this town that no longer exist? Are they going to try to bring in work type businesses?
Yeah, I think our ultimate goal is to bring living wage jobs to the city of North Bend, so you can live and work here. And there's, you know, that's definitely an approach. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if we're going to put people in those houses that we're building, it would sure help have people live here.
Right.
That's good to know. Is this a long-term contract or?
Is it 50,000? It's 2 years.
2 years. Is it contingent on him being successful in recruiting?
That's a good question. your council's done a very good job thinking this through in the realm of the impact and how to measure the impact. There's, you know, a few people. I know Martin Vulcan's been very interested in this, and you know, Trevor, and making sure that whatever gets recruited fits the brand of our outdoors and our small town character. So.
Mm-hmm. I just hope it's like a baseball contract, you know, bonuses based on results.
Yeah.
This discussion we had about the front end of the meeting was squarely in the cross of ears of our rural character issue. There was so much slope on that property. We would be losing more timber than we would be satisfied with again to get the footprint established that they had laid out on their plan. It just looked like another unwanted clear cut to satisfy the dynamics of the development at a very visible location. So I'm kind of glad it didn't go through. But when a developer comes to us with a plan, are we critical at the beginning of the discussion about what we want it to look like at the end of the process, or do we deal with that as the plan unfolds? And how do we talk to the developers about
it? Yeah, you have a proactive development team. A lot of us are here tonight. There's others, like, you know, I, Mark Rigos. We take a lot of time. We allow for a process that I'm an advocate about, which is a free pre-application meeting. It's a little more focused on the front end, but what it saves is a ton of work on the back end with developers submitting things that the city won't approve or wouldn't. So, yeah, we definitely do that. But sometimes people have their vision, and they can exercise that vision.
So I walked through that tonight, literally 2 hours before the meeting, and I saw tree after tree, flag, and her purpose. I know what that purpose was. Yeah. You guys have a chance to do that same walk. Do you agree with what they had flagged out there? Had you had, they maybe hadn't made the walks since they had identified the tape trees. It looked like streamers out there. Every tree had a flag on it sometime. Most of them would be big trees. And I just wondered if you had a chance to look at them, or if they do that to walk through and see if they agree with or disagree with them. Does that process occur?
Well, you know, we on purpose tried not to spend a whole lot of time delving into the project because, you know, we wanted to get the recommendation, and that's where we would get into all the details. But you're correct with the amount of grading. I mean, it would be a lot of tree removal.
And Commissioner Ryan, keep in mind that the staff supports the code that we pass. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Chapter 19 on our tree regulations, you might find that you want to make some amendments to that. Mm-hmm. And if you do, then I would request that you make that request to the staff, and I would support that.
Yes, Chair.
I'm sorry?
Additional staff.
Because I asked about it. Code losers.
I've been in your position. I know how hard you're working. I can see it in your eyes. I just know it. You know, my heart goes out to you.
Thank you.
I just want you to guys see what makes up.
Okay. Okay. Given the time, I'm going to try and do this quick. First off, thank you guys for coming to our meeting. I really appreciate it. It's nice to have some technical support and guidance, as well as our very technical staff. I feel fortunate that when I hear about other cities who have waste and you know, fluff, that all, especially I see regularly our public works guys out there working hard. I know you guys work doubly hard. The meetings you go to plus your day job, right? But I thank you, the commission, the volunteers. We did a lot of work. The sewer and water plan is important. It is what is needed to grow the town or stops growth in our town, right? It's needed for health and many reasons, right? That said, our goal is to try and keep our meetings on documents to 3 meetings. So this one went 4 just because it was a late introduction. But in general, I want to try and keep it to 3 because I'm told of this storm of work that's going to come our way.
Storm is here. Yeah. What?
I'm is getting to that now. Wait. Two. Yeah. It is kind of calm, I think.
Oh, my God.
Well, according to Councilmember Rosen, or Mayor Pro Tem Rosen, that we'll have some hot topics coming our way. And
yes,
he has offered, as a council member, to come if the Planning Commission would like a council member present at any of our meetings. So if you feel that you would like to have him here, please pass that along, and I will have him come. In the past, council members were seen to be influencing the commission so they don't come on a regular basis. But if we do need some support or some insight from the council, I think it would be beneficial, and I appreciated his offer. Last Tuesday, the mayor gave the State of the City address, so if you haven't listened to it, I would recommend you listen to it. It talks all about development and preserving land and the hotel and some other things that the city is working on, as well as some projects like the roundabout on Park Street that we, you know, kind of are interested in. Last, we passed the resolution for the downtown zone. And at our February 9th meeting, and Jenna has told me that on March 21st it will be on the council meeting.
Committee meeting. Yeah, we're going to bring it to committee first. Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, that's where it's at. Any update on our Planning Commission procedures?
Well, we talked to our attorney. We sent him off to our attorney. They were as swamped as us, and so they were not on the highest of priority. So Amy did not get to them, and now Amy last week, she did give notice that she has moved on to something else. So we're going to have to circle back around.
I thought I did see an email that she made some proposals right on her way out the door.
Huh?
So we should check that again. We might have some draft comments
from
her.
It was literally just recently that so we'll see where we're at on that one. Will you remind me when I
Yeah.
And then this is an official request that if we're going to provide packets or agendas for the participants and public that come to our meeting, that we print the same conduct on the back of ours that is on the city council's. So it talks about a certain decorum that the public has to have, and that way it makes it clear you make your comments to the chair and be respectful and that you don't attack anybody. So
when there's a hearing then?
Yep. Yeah, yeah, it's on the back of the city council agendas. I think it should be on the back of ours.
Okay.
With that, anything further, commission? Would anybody like to make a motion to adjourn? Motion by Commissioner Ryan, second by Commissioner Von Trapp. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Commission is adjourned, 9:13.